As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
The Phil Hayes Show.
Hello there, Dan here from The Phil Hayes Show. We've got a bonus episode for you this week. You may have read the article on The Athletic that Phil and David Ornstein did where they sat down with Andrea Radrizzani, Leeds United's owner. That happened up at Thorpe Arch just before the season kicked off. Well, here you can hear the audio from that chat. So enjoy this, and we'll speak to you later in the week.
Andrea, thank you so much for your time. It's an absolute pleasure to be here at Thorpe Arch for me and Phil from The Athletic. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Firstly, it's rare for an owner of any club to speak, so we feel quite privileged. Secondly, you're speaking to us during a transfer window, which is arguably the busiest time for somebody at the top of a Premier League football club. So how are things for you at the moment?
Yeah, it's scary because it's even two of you, so no double trouble. And it's a great opportunity, in my view, to take some time to explain about the club decision, the strategy, looking a little bit about the past, but also talk about today, the present, the season that's starting this weekend, and also a little bit about the vision, the future of the club. And I thank you and your platform for giving me the opportunity to spread our message and clear to the many questions that over the year, the past year, the fans has had in their mind.
We'll get stuck into them all. I think Phil's going to lead us away.
Yeah, like David says, we appreciate you taking the time to do this with us. I wonder if it's best for us to go back to the events of February and the decision to sack Marcelo Bielsa to replace him as head coach. Nobody at the club has really spoken about that decision at length. So can you explain to us why that was taken and what it was specifically that made you feel that at that stage you had to make a change?
First of all, I really seriously, honestly tell you that I never thought before to sack Bielsa ever, because he is a legend. He was a legend for this club, for what he achieved, for not only the result of the promotion, but how he changed and transformed the culture of this club, following really the desire that I had. And I think the intuition myself and Victor had to bring him to Leeds, he paid back, and we achieved amazing result after 17 years of being out of the Premier League. And not only in the pitch, as I said, but in the entire club organization. So I never thought even this moment could ever happen, ever. But during the year, I think the moment that I start to have a doubt and something in my mind was the game at Birmingham, when actually the media was with 3-3. Was it though?
This is Aston Villa.
Yeah, away. And I remember that all the media, even like talking positive about our performance, but in reality, for me, it was half-time. I wanted almost to leave the stadium because I was disappointed about the lack of discipline in the pitch and how it was easy to get in and score goals against us. No? And that was the first moment where I realized that maybe something is wrong now and the team probably cannot execute anymore what he has been asking for the last years. They start to become tired mentally more than physically. And that was the first moment where I said, I need to really think about if it's the right thing to continue or not, because it was too easy. It was a game that normally we would have won, and for the way the game was it flew. But we draw, luckily, we were down 3-1 after being up 1-0. And so, and the discipline in the pitch and the organization was not right, in my opinion.
You wanted to leave the stadium at half time. Did you consider in your emotional mind sacking him there and then? It's time to go
match. But there was very disappointed, and I remember the when we scored just before the whistle, halftime whistle, I didn't even celebrate, enjoy. I was the only one among all the management that seriously I stay inside. I was really disappointed for what I was looking in the pitch. So obviously the responsibility is not only the coach, it's also to be shared with the players. But in that moment I felt something was broken. That's, you know, when you have a tipping point and you say, maybe something is going in the wrong direction this year. Then it was too soon to take any decision, so I let the time show how we would be reacting. And then when I saw against the top club, obviously the top clubs have another level, but I think in a way it was the system, the one-to-one marker and everything that was asked to the player was not working, but also was putting themselves almost in a situation to be humiliated, because I remember some games where it was so easy to score against us. And I didn't feel any more comfortable for the players, for the fans, for the club. And at the end, I realized that Marcelo had only one way. He could not compromise with his way. So at the end, this could risk to bring a relegation to the club. So I could not afford to take that risk. And we did take the risk until the very last minute, as you know, but I had to do something. So it was about when. I remember that I decided after the game with Manchester United, because a team that normally, even there, a team that come back with a fantastic performance of the players and the fans on the stand, come back from 0-2 to 2-2 in a very difficult situation, weather and stadium, everything. The player show an amazing character and desire to turn it around, and they did it. The game was 2-2 around 70 minutes or second half. And 90% of the time in football, when you have this situation, either you win the game or you don't. You never lose it. Even there, it was so easy to come in and score, and we lost really badly. So I think I decided that after that game, I decided. And then it was about personal, I want to change immediately. Then I consult with the management, and we decide to, because it was Liverpool game and then Tottenham, we decide to take a bit of time. And then both games were also very, very difficult for the players. And then we change after Tottenham.
There had been times previously, albeit short ones, where the form performances had dipped a little bit under Marcelo, and he had always found a way to bring it back and to get it under control again. Why did it feel different this time? Why didn't you have that same confidence in him?
Because I could see the player were arrived in emotionally and physically, they were really at the end. So we need something, we need change, we need something to recompact the group. And it was very risky in both ways. So it was not easy to decide to potentially die with him, or die with someone else, which would be even worse. So in any case, I will lose.
Did you think you were going to get relegated if you kept him?
Yes. Yes.
That's why it was so important for you to do it.
And what of the players then? How much did you seek feedback from the players?
The players, they were supporting him. And the players were behind him for the legacy of what they've done together, how they've grown with him. But in the next day when we arrived here with Jesse Marsh, I never seen the atmosphere so changed and so happy among the player and the staff. So something was spoiled inside, and until the moment we changed, he couldn't come out. No, you know, it was tapped in by his presence, but which was a fantastic experience, a fantastic coach, and we will have always legacy with this club. But there was a time at the end. I have my own opinion about Marcelo that I think is I adore him, and it was very hard for me to do with him what I had to do and the way I had to do it. But I try to do all the time the best for the club, and in that time I did the best for the club. However, I think what is his strength is also his weakness, because his strength is the discipline and the one way to work and the system of the football that he has. So he doesn't compromise with anything else than his idea of football. But this strength is also his weakness, because the lack of adaptation and flexibility, it took it to the end.
Given the feeling of the players that you mentioned there, that they didn't really realise until they got the new man that something needed lifting, but the feeling at that time, the feeling of the fan base, many of whom to this day are very upset. How hard was it for you to actually tell him? And could you explain to us, you told him face to face? Was it emotional?
Yeah. I told him face to face. It was, you know, it was very different than every meeting I had with him. Normally, every meeting with him, he opens to a very long conversation. And in this case, probably didn't expect it, because I was, I used and I always support him unconditionally. So maybe I thought that if something never would change like that, in my unconditional support. And I saw him probably hard and speechless for the first time. But it was very hard for me too. A man which I share one of the best day of my life and the best experience in my life, and a project so unique, so different, so special, like Leeds United back in the Premier League. So it was very difficult as well for me. But I need to prioritize the club and try to be rational in every moment I decide for the club.
Are you going to honour him in any way? Are we going to see statues or tributes?
Yes, I'm happy to... We are sending him a communication. We would like to name the training ground after his name, so Torque Park becoming Marcelo Bielsa training ground. And I have still an idea for a long time I share with him, that one day I would love to build a university of football with his name. So I hope he will still be open for that idea.
So you appoint Jesse Marsh in February. We understand that Victor Orta had been analysing Jesse for a couple of years, a long time. Yeah. Why Jesse specifically? What was it about Jesse that made you think this is the coach that we need?
I mean, the process was led by Victor Orta, obviously, and he analysed over 40 coaches and to come at the conclusion with a few of them shortlisted. And then we have met with a few, and me personally with Victor, and then at the end we had already in mind Jesse for last year. No, then he signed with Leipzig, and we continued with Marcelo. So when during the year, when Marcelo was still in charge, we kept the communication with Jesse, and we were thinking about him for this season. So we never thought about changing Marcelo. Then when the crisis, hit, we have talked to him, and to be honest, I'm very grateful that he took the challenge, because it was really a challenge, and he came in the most difficult way, in the most difficult possible way, to come after Marcelo, a man, a legend for this club, in a difficult situation on the football. So I'm very grateful, and I love the man. I think this year we'll have time to show me he's a great coach, but the man has already got me completely.
That's interesting, because he came very close to taking the team down. He didn't get the initial bounce, but then right when it mattered, he kept you in the Premier League. So what do you expect from him this season? Have you got high expectations of him?
Last year he was in his team, so he was more a job that he had done in excellent way in terms of motivation, keeping the group together, keep them focused, and I'm very, very pleased what he delivered. And the courage, he was brave, and he has been a leader, absolutely a leader. I think now is his team, so he need to show his football, and he need to play a good aggressive football. Maybe will be a bit more vertical than Bielsa, more fast in some, not fast the same, but keeping high pressing. So there are similarities with the list of Bielsa, but also we defend differently. We don't defend anymore man to man, so there is more flexibility, more scheme, more different options. So we'll see. I'm very excited to see.
But does he need to lead the team up to a higher position in your expectation as owner? Can you be having another relegation battle?
No, I think last year we end up to be lower in the standing than our possibilities. We had, I remember, only just in February we had more than 50, 55 injuries. And every team will be affected when you lose your captain, center half, your center midfielder, national team player Calvin Phillips for almost all the season, and your striker Patrick Bamford, at that time national team player for all the season. So when you lose the spine of the team, every team will suffer. And more than that, we suffer many other injuries all the year. But I don't want to take this as a justification. I think we impossible we will be at that level. And I think we did extremely well the first year, arriving 9. Extremely bad last year. Probably the 2 is in the middle. But I think this year we have, in my opinion, done a great job in the market, and we have a very competitive team. The target I set is between 10 to 14 position. Then if we are lucky, we are close to 10 or more. If we are not lucky, we are 15. But I think we are in that range. I don't want to have any more heart attack risk as in Brentford.
I was going to ask about that, because when I took the train down to Brentford for the last game, everybody, all the supporters on the train said, we think we're going to be relegated today. They all felt that was coming. Did you fear the worst at that game? In that week building up to it,
I will share with you a video I have of my day. It's 11 minutes of my day. It's very nice to watch. I was stressed, but all inside. Outside, I was calm, and I was hopeful. It was a very strange day, because it was a mix of emotion between hope, fear, during the 90 minutes, I mean. It was a lot of emotion together. No, but I was confident. I was confident, and what honestly made that day one of the best in my life was the opportunity that I stayed close to the players and the coach, and I seen a fantastic work done by that day by Jesse. In a way, he was composed, he was calm, and he kept everybody really calm. And when you need to leave that moment, you need to have a calm approach. So I think he did a fantastic job. Also, the role of our captains. I mean, Liam as a captain, but Luke, Stewart, they were injured, but they were all there in the locker room supporting everybody. This to show how this group is compacted, and it's something that we need to protect. The culture we have built in the last year, based on the leadership of these guys, Luke, Liam, Stewart, Adam, all the backbone, the leaders of the team, and now it's growing among other international players like Rodrigo and others that they've joined recently. So this is something we need to protect, and is the key of success that I think we will continue to grow as a club.
One of the interesting things about Leeds now is the American connection that you have. Obviously, 49ers Enterprises on the board. You have Jesse's head coach. You have a couple of American players as well. So does the club have a concerted plan to reach out more to America? And crack that market?
I mean, it sounds strange, but it's a pure coincidence. Yeah, it's a pure coincidence. I mean, now we see a massive growth in our audience in America. Obviously, we need to react in terms of marketing and off-pitch activities, PR and merchandising and everything in the US. But to be honest, the way we build this triangle between partner ownership, structure, coach and players is a pure coincidence. There was no plan at all. I mean, to be honest, Aronson was a player that we decided to have with Bielsa before we appointed Jesse. Yes, Jesse wanted Tyler Adams, not because America, because he's a very valuable player, and he had it with him in Leipzig, and we were looking for that characteristic, and he's a we look at other players, but he matched very well with Mark Rocca. So it's really a pure coincidence.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
You mentioned that you feel you've had a really strong market. So Phil's here on a day-to-day basis. I have a wider perspective. And the first thing I would think when I hear about Leeds' market is that two of your best players, Calvin Phillips and Rafinha, were sold. And most clubs would want and do everything they can to keep their best players. The team came close to relegation with them in the squad. Calvin was injured a lot of the time. Do you feel that it weakens Leeds United to have sold those two star players?
Good question. I think no. I think we are better. We have lost two champions, two big players, but we got six good players. And I think the team needed more solidity, need more option, and need a bigger squad. So six good players, in my opinion, make a difference rather than two big players. I might be wrong, but this is my conviction, and I think the pitch will show it. Also, I would like to summarize what we have done in the three campaign of Premier League on the market. We have invested over £260 million, and I think we are among the top clubs in terms of investing in players. This year, we invested about 105, which is just below Manchester City and is probably the sixth in the list for what I saw recently. I mean, the market is still open, so might change, but this is what happened. And it's the first year in the Premier League we are selling players. So we did 3 years without selling any player. And in the 2 years before, we invested £160 million. So I think the club has committed a lot, even over the capacity and the resources of the club itself. So which means that to make it sustainable, we need to manage and become a destination for player, but in the meantime also be used to sell sometime our one of the best player and another transition, another new player coming up. That's why we are focusing on investing youth. We have just announced yesterday 5 years contract for Geoffrey Geller, Somerville and Greenwood. We have signed Sonny Perksin from West Ham. So we bought another talent from Spain last year. So we have a very good youth academy developing talent. And this has to be mixed with the transition and also some player coming in here as a destination. Like what I feel now, I think that these two deals, Rafinha and Phillips, are important not only to give us the opportunity to buy six, but also to be perceived from the other talent player as a destination before to go to a big club. And that's what we need to be now, I think. I mean, the fact that you can come here, play 2-3 years, and go to Real Madrid or Barcelona or Manchester City, for me, is a pride. In this moment, we need to be realistic. We cannot be at that level. It would be wrong to put the players in a cage when they have the talent. I mean, Rafinha is a special player. So, honestly, I think with a good World Cup, can become one of the top 20 players in the world. So why keep him in the cage?
I guess two questions that arise out of that. The first is, in the two Premier League seasons, do you think the recruitment has worked well enough? The individual players that you've spent on, has that worked well enough? And also, when it comes to buying players who use Leeds as a stepping stone, is there only a certain amount of time in which the supporters will be able to tolerate, I guess, seeing the best players moving on?
Over the time, I think we will have to be better and keeping the players, some players. So this is not forever strategy. So over the time, I think we will be able to keep some of the best players and make them lifetime elites. Honestly, for Calvin Phillips, for example, is a different situation than Rafinha. Calvin Phillips could stay here all his life and become the next captain. I didn't want to let him go. He decided to go, and it was very clear to me that it was his ambition to play at that level and to go, and we let him go. But it was a very friendly conversation, but it wasn't our desire. With Rafinha, it was different. It was more a sacrifice to buy the players we need to reinforce the squad, because we cannot do another 3 years, spend another 100 million and not have income. The club will collapse. So, but over the time, I think in medium long term, we will be able to maintain some of the talent. We don't want to sell all our talent every time. We need to have a good model. I always said the model for me, the best model in the past, I've said many times, was Leicester model. So I think we need to be realistic and in our possibility, try to build. But at the same time, sometimes we need to let go someone and bring other new players. It's not a shame. It's just a phase of the club. Obviously, to maintain the best player and continue to grow, we need to be supported financially and we need to structure the team and the club differently, which means also it's linked to the development of the stadium, which is another important area of growth. So our club now is around 205, 210 million revenue. If we develop the stadium to 55,000 attendance, we could probably reach 260, 270, which will become probably the 8 or 10 club in the league in terms of revenue. So we have the infrastructure, the city, the fans to make this club in the top 10, I think. We need to work and maintain and have a steady growth step by step to be sustainable and to be healthy as a club, as a company. It's possible, yes, but it takes time and takes investment and a right decision. Sometimes we do mistake. I mean, when you mention about the market, you're right, but there is no club that never that nail or every single player they purchase. Impossible. I think we should put a line after 3-5 years and see how many players were successful, how many not, what's the performance, and then find a judgment around a period of time, because we have cases where maybe the performance has not been at the level of the investment, and we have other cases. The opposite. Ilan Meslier is a fantastic example. Pascal Struijk is a fantastic example. So we need to have always a judgment overall. We can judge on a single individual deal.
No, that seems fair. On Rafinha, we've run a long article this morning about the basket case that is Barcelona at the moment. Can you give us any insight into what completing that deal was like? Because it sounded incredibly complex. Yes. And incredibly difficult.
As you read, Barcelona wasn't in a clear situation to buy player, but they were shopping around, but they were not able to confirm the deals because their situation was not clear financially. So they were very active everywhere with many players in Europe, not only Rafinha, Lewandowski and many others, trying to hold the players while they were trying to fix their own problems. And this created a lot of confusion in the market because not having a proper negotiation with the club as supposed to be, because normally the rules is club deal with the club, not with the player. So we couldn't deal with Barcelona because they were not in the position to deal. And we made a deal with Chelsea because the player wanted to go and he was open to listen to offer from Premier League clubs. And Chelsea was in his favorable position. But unfortunately, then the player, let's say probably Barcelona influence and lobby, convinced the player that to wait until they would find a solution. And this unfortunately show again the power that and the leverage the players and their agent have in the system, which is, I think, for me, exaggerated. It's too much. We do a lot of investment to build clubs. We invest hundreds of millions, but all the power, it seems to be on agents and representative of these players.
That's interesting. Would you rather had preferred to have done the deal with Chelsea?
For me, it was done, the deal with Chelsea. When I have a deal, my word is a word, and I felt ashamed to go back to Todd Boehly, the owner of Chelsea, and change the position. It was really, for me, disrespectful and not the right thing to do. But I didn't have a choice. And if I could decide to don't sell the player, I would rather prefer that. But I didn't have a choice because for us it was more important to buy six players than keep Rafinha.
And you also had Arsenal pushing. There was some vague interest from Tottenham as well.
Yeah. We had interest from Tottenham, from Arsenal, from Chelsea and Barcelona. So all of these clubs. And the best deal and the deal we agreed was with Chelsea. The end the deal with came up with Barcelona is pretty much the same for the way we structure at the very end. But it took time, it was hard, we had to manage well. And as I said, I would rather don't sell it. But I didn't have a choice because we need to buy six players.
I'm sorry, but have you ever experienced something like Barcelona and what's happening there? I've never seen it in my career.
No, I don't know the behind the scene and how they suddenly found the money and how it works. It's not clear.
Are you confident that you'll get the money from them? That has been one of the big questions through the summer. You know, can they pay for these players?
Look, I tell you the 2nd of September... if not, we will have a global case on all the media in the world about Barcelona, so I don't know.
You wanted Charles de Ketelaere, that wasn't a secret. You haven't got de Ketelaere, he's gone to AC Milan.
First of all, I want to say that Victor Horta, the team behind him, and Jesse and myself, we have done a fantastic job because out of six targets, we got five. in only 2 weeks. So before going to Australia, we had 5 targets completed. And I don't see any club in Europe that have completed 5 targets in such a short period of time. So we were clear, we moved fast, and we closed the deals. The only one that, unfortunately, we did everything perfect, including the agreement with Bruges. So we had the deal with the club, but not with the player. It was the Charles de Cattelar. It was our icing on the cake. It was our plus and special player. And unfortunately, we didn't make it. So good luck to him. But honestly, we also were competing with AC Milan. And I mean, they won the title. They're in Champions League. The fact that he was watching our documentary, he was 50-50 doubtful about Milan or Leeds for a period of time already made me really proud that we are in the right direction, but it wasn't enough. Next time we need to do better.
It shows how far you've come. It's also probably painful for you to lose him to the city where you live.
To be honest, I have one regret, that I should have gone maybe 10 days before to Belgium to close the deal. And we had the period of time that I knew that Milan was sleeping because of the change of ownership, and I hesitate maybe a week or 10 days more that I should have done a little bit earlier.
Interesting. There'll be many supporters of Leeds United watching this saying, who are we going to get next? Are we still active in the market? Will more players come in before the deadline? Will some players go? We see rumours about Jack Harrison.
Look, we are happy at this moment how the squad is. I have a lot of confidence in Geoffrey Gellert, together with Patrick Bamford, coming back this season. So I'm really relaxed about the team and confident we do well. But we are actively monitoring and discussing with Jesse and Victor. We still looking at opportunity for an offensive player. Could be a number 9, could be a number 9, 10. We don't know yet exactly. Depends on the profile. Also left back because of the injury with Junior, but anyway, it's coming back soon. We are monitoring, but we don't have to do a deal at any cost. So we are active, but Charles de Cattelar was a special player. So we were all in agreement to make a big effort. We offered 40 million euro, and we agreed with Bruges 40 million euro. So it was an important investment for the future of the club. For the other player, unless we are really convinced 100% that we improve, if not, we don't move.
I suppose that one of the lessons of last season was that if you don't have the right resources or the right amount of resources in a position, it can cost you. No, that was yes, pretty clear last season.
We have discussed a lot about a next striker. Who we bring? If we bring a young striker, we tend to kill the space and the opportunity for Gellert, which I believe is one of the most talented forward in the country at his age. And his numbers talk. Every time he plays, he has an impact. So I'm very, very hesitant to bring a striker that could kill the time of Joffrey in the pitch. So it's not an easy decision. On the number 10, we're covered with Aronson, Rodrigo. We see. If we find the right player, and we are convinced we bring him. If not, we wait January or we wait next year. But we'll see. No rush.
Do you expect to sell the Jack Harrison and Newcastle interest?
No, absolutely not. Jack is very important. He has impacted even same level of Rafinha on stats. There's no way Jeff stays here.
On stadium development, which you touched on, it's important commercially, but you also have a very big waiting list of season ticket holders. So for them, it's important for them to see the expansion, you know, so they can get in the door. Yeah. It's been spoken about a lot. Where is it at the moment?
So it's been spoken about a lot because it's a dream we have since I arrived and since we reached the Premier League. At the same time, we need to always look at what is possible and feasible and sustainable. And even was our objective, I always said to Angus, we look at the expansion on the new stadium, renovation, when we are in the 30th of Premier League. Why? Because if we go back, I mean, the chances to go back in Championship is very high in the first and second year, and lower, much lower after. So if we go back in Championship, what do we do with 55,000 and 100 million loan for building a 55,000 ground stadium? So I think now we are in the moment where we can concretely move on. Angus have initiated some activities to finance the project. It will be over 100 million investment to renovate the West End and build it to 55,000 tenants. is a very important project because the stadium is, as you know, is fantastic, but its atmosphere is very old. It's been built over 100 years ago, and a lot of problems and facilities are damaged and lack of services, toilets are not adequate. So every year we're investing in CapEx to modernize a part of the stadium, but obviously it's been done 100 years ago. So and before me, nobody put any money in the stadium. So we are doing step by step. Hopefully, we will move sooner with the financial partner to rebuild the West End. And it will take 2-3 years, I think, to complete.
Obviously, there's been vast investment, increasingly so, from the 49ers Enterprises. Can you tell us what your intentions are for the ownership of this club? And if they continue to increase their stake, they're going to become the majority shareholder.
At the moment, I think there is no need to change that, and I'm happy. I'm very happy. I really dream to bring this club to play in Europe, and then I'm happy to leave. So I still have some work to do here. But to be honest, we are very good friends with the Niners. They are a solid partner. They let me work in peace, and they're supportive. So we became honestly very good friends. So we are in touch continuously. I think even in the going in Leeds or even with other clubs in Europe, we will do probably together. And I don't know. I don't have an answer, to be honest, because in this moment there is nothing under discussion. We are happy in the way we are and we are fine. They have, as you know, an option to go majority in 2024. So in that maybe before or that moment or after something we will be discussed, in this moment we are super happy and everything is stable and balanced.
You'll know the English phrase, getting cold feet about something. How did last season affect them? And did you sense as relegation was threatening that they, because I mean, going back into the AFL is a big shock to the system.
Yeah, it was, to be honest, yeah, maybe they were more stressed than me. Definitely they were more stressed than me. But also I noticed after the season where we met and we shared the plan for the summer and the market transfer, it was not easy to convince them, explain to them why I want to sell the best player and buy six. You know? So now they got it. I think they got it. And I think they understand that it's the right decision and they are very supportive.
I just needed to pick up on American ownership because you mentioned Todd Boehly, who you dealt with in the Rafinha situation. He's been in the news an incredible amount because he's co-owner, chairman and interim sporting director. He is negotiating deals on the front line, having just arrived in the Premier League. What do you make of him and also what's going on at Chelsea at the moment?
I love it. I love what he's doing. I told him personally, because you need to be very humble to with this level to spend your time to learn a new job. I mean, he could do in many other different ways. He could hire the best football director, and he probably will or is doing, but he wants to touch him with his hands, first the field, understand, make mistake, learn, and then he will be able to manage the business with the management and probably the best professional in Europe that he can afford to have. So, but I appreciate it. I like the approach a lot.
Is he good? You were negotiating with him. Is he, so many people are talking about him. What's he like? Is he going to be a success at Chelsea in your view?
He will take a little bit of time to learn because everybody passed from the initial phase to learn. It's a difficult job at the end. It's a group of people to put together and fit in a mosaic, and it's not easy, and it's not just to buy the cards like I did in the first year when I arrived here, you know? And so he will go for this phase, and I think he will be successful. I like his approach anyway. In my opinion, I like what he's bringing to the league because he has an American approach of experience, obviously, in his career, in his life there, where the importance of the league is the collective approach to the market, no? And I think going forward, in my opinion, Chelsea can play a very important role in the league itself as a bridge between the 14 clubs and the six. Mm-hmm. So, in my opinion, thanks to Todd entry in the Premier League shareholder structure, it will facilitate the communication and find common interest to build a better business for the Premier League itself. So I'm positive about the rentals because they understand that the collective approach is successful for both sides.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We were talking beforehand about the money that keeps coming into the Premier League. So Chelsea, for example, but also Newcastle, where the Saudi investment has come, which kind of begs the question of how well placed Leeds are to compete in it as the finances just seem to go up and up and up.
On the pitch, eh?
On the pitch, but clubs commercially as well.
Yes, I think we, at this moment, neither myself and the 49ers have the capacity or the intention to put that level of money to compete in the top six, in theory. Because then, at the end of the day, we look at how much money has been invested by teams, we are in sixth position. And if you check last year and the year before, during COVID, we are still in the same. We are one of the clubs that invest the most. So, in theory, we are far from the capacity of these state-controlled clubs or multi-billionaires club, in theory. In reality, we are investing smartly and we are investing more than many other clubs.
So just, I guess, as a final thought, because we probably should wrap up, what do you need to happen this season to make you happy as an owner? And how do you avoid a season like last season affecting your, I guess, enthusiasm or your taste for football club ownership when it is that, you know, it's that on the edge.
Yeah, I start from the second one. I don't have any doubt that we avoid any situation similar to last year. Impossible. I'm very convinced we're going to be a good season. Why? Because I see the group, the quality of the players. I mean, we bought five of the six players, if I remember well, or four or five, they're national team players. That adding on other national team players we have, like Llorente, or ex-national team player like Rodrigo, and Koch is between in very close. Bamford was in the national team. So I think we have quality in this group. We have quality on the pitch, and we have extremely high quality in terms of moral values and togetherness. So I don't have any doubt that it is no case that we're going to be next, even near the relegation zone. In terms of ambition and goal, I would like to see some good football, have fun, enjoy. I think this season should be the season of enjoy. The first season we were surprised, but we didn't enjoy much because there was no fans in the stadium, was COVID, and last season was a very difficult season. This year we need enjoyment.
I just wanted to wrap up with a thought towards your fans, because I don't want them looking at this interview and saying, everything's rosy in the garden. Do you feel to blame for anything? Do you feel some of their criticism has been fair? And how would you like to end this interview in terms of your message to them?
To be honest, I suffered a lot last year, the criticism, because it happened the first time in my life that I was abused by people, literally at the stadium. I remember after Aston Villa game and other circumstances, and I didn't feel I deserve it. I've done always my best, and I put my time, my money, everything I could for the club that I was not born here. It became my club as a part of a project. For me, it's a project, it's a business. I became the first Leeds fan. For 90 minutes, I'm the number one fan. After the 95 minutes of the game, I'm a manager, I'm an owner, and nothing to do with the fan. So I really want to clear this position, because for me, it's been like this from day one. It will be always like this. I was not born in Leeds and breathed in Leeds. I became and I breathe Leeds now, and I'm proud of that. It's part of my professional life that now became also my heart life. But has been always like that. But it was very hard to be abused for something that I didn't have a responsibility, and I did actually all the opposite. But it's part of the game, and I also learned that the one making noise and being vocal and abusing and be aggressive are a small minority. Most of the people love and appreciate what we have done, all of us, not me only, but Victor and Angus and everybody that is putting a lot of effort every day. This club is amazing. We have amazing people also in lower the line, that they are very loyal and they sacrifice a lot. And we had an hard mission. I would like to see many others to take this club from the way it was in 2018 out of Cellino. You came here many times. You see the change, the facilities. They're clean, they're in order, they're modern. When you came before, I think it was completely different.
The
pool didn't work, didn't have the water. So there was no chef. Now we have two kitchens, one for the academy, one for the play. So everything changed A to Z. And it's not in one day. It's a lot of work, a lot of activities, a lot of investment, finding the right people. So this is not under their eyes. They don't see that. They see only the 90 minutes results. So, but I take that. I start to manage the... I don't know which criticism is right, to be honest. I can't find it. You maybe have one that you think is right.
Well, as I say, I think that the Bielsa sacking was the biggest one of that, but you have explained it today, and thank you for joining us. We really appreciate your time. I hope people enjoy listening to it, and good luck for the season.
Yeah, thank you for your openness as well. It's a privilege, and we look forward to seeing the reaction.
The Phil Hay Show.